IsraelSin.com.
The next program, Steve, is my friend David Epstein, who has created for himself a fascinating business, which he will describe to us now. Sitting with David Epstein in his office in Emek Rephaim. Behind this building is a Jerusalem swimming pool. There are a number of arches at the bottom of the building. For those of you who know this area of Jerusalem, you will recognize it. David's an old friend with an interesting profession and business. I think it's is it a business or a profession, and would you please tell us about it? How do you call it?
Well, I worked for 35 years in the profession of community organization. At first in the United States in the Jewish community, working for Jewish federations in Cleveland, St. Louis, Boston, and Louisville, Kentucky. And for the last 25 plus years in Israel, working both representing different federations in Israel, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Houston, and central New Jersey. And working within the social service structures of Israel, in the welfare department in Jerusalem, in the Jerusalem Municipal Decentralization Project, which is called the Minhalot or Matnasim, community centers and boroughs, kind of citizen empowerment projects. I spent 3 years abroad in New York and Teaneck, New Jersey, working for the Joint Distribution Committee as the Israel Desk Director in the 90s. In the last 10 years, I've been working as an independent consultant to nonprofit organizations here in Israel, specializing in assisting the nonprofits to understand how the concept of resource development or fundraising is and ought to be a central aspect of what they do.
Is a nonprofit organization in Israel also a nonprofit organization in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in the European Union?
The concept is the same, but each country registers their own nonprofits. In the United States, a nonprofit in most cases is a 501c3, which is the Internal Revenue Service's categorization. In Israel, if it is a organization whose purpose is not for the profit of its members and whose purpose is for the public good, it can be registered as a nonprofit. There's an additional level of qualification that it needs to go through in order to become a tax credited or deductible organization for the purposes of charitable contributions in Israel. Now, if an Israeli nonprofit wants to receive funds from a contributor in the United States or in Britain or somewhere else, and the contributor wants a tax deduction, then the Israeli nonprofit needs to either have a friends organization that is registered in that country or a channel, an existing nonprofit registered in the given country, which agrees to transfer the funds. In some cases, as in the case of the PEF, Israel Endowment Funds in New York, the funds are transferred without any further charge or deduction. And in other cases, some organizations will take an administrative charge for the service.
Can you give us some idea of the variety of organizations that you work with?
I feel fortunate to have been somebody who is able to come from America to Israel and transfer my skills and profession from one to the other. I wasn't like the Russians doctors, who many of whom had to come and become taxi drivers or street cleaners or what have you. Even though the process of learning Hebrew and of learning the ropes and the gaining the professional experience necessary to be able to work fluently and respected in the professional community here took a while. I fortunately was able to do it. My clients, to answer your question, are very varied. I have residential treatment centers for children who have been removed from their homes because of children and youth, because of either the home situation or family problems. I have a couple of yeshivot hesder, which are the particularly the one in Shderot, which has been bombarded on an ongoing basis for several years now. These are yeshivot where people come and both serve in the army and study in a mixed program. I do work for a number of different projects affiliated with Bar-Ilan University in the area of women's rights and rights for disabilities, people with disabilities, and there's a wonderful project of teaching Islam to yeshiva educators. To attempt to change the stereotypes in the national religious community that Arabs are all bad and Islam is a religion dedicated to the destruction of the Jewish people. And certainly we know that there are those who so interpret their religion, but the vast majority and the mainstream Islam is not. And this is a project that's doing a good job at getting us to recognize that we have to learn to live together and that religions ought to be directed jointly towards peace. I represent an organization called Karmei Ha'ir, which is very fascinating. You know, the poverty gap is growing in Israel. Fortunately, high-tech and the economy is making a lot of people be able to have a very nice life here. On the other hand, the gaps between the rich and the poor are growing, and the poor are showing up more and more at the soup kitchens and the various feeding centers and clothing centers that the welfare organizations are setting up. Karmei Ha'ir is a special organization in Jerusalem that decided that rather than giving the basic needs and taking away dignity, that they would give dignity and also give basic needs at the same time. So if you go to Agrippa Street, number 71, and go in, you'll go into a restaurant called Karmei Ha'ir. You'll sit down. You'll be served food cooked by professional chefs, most of whom are volunteers, by waitresses and waiters who are all volunteers, and you'll be served a three-course meal. And when you finish, you'll get up and you'll leave, and if you have money, you'll put it in the pushka, and if you don't have money, you'll leave. And that is the way that the super kitchen is it operates. And what's interesting is that there is a mixed population that goes there. Now, a lot of the food is donated by the local food merchants in the Shuk, in Machane Yehuda, which is right there. And they come and eat at the restaurant, eating their food and paying for it, while others who can't afford do so and don't feel the same sense of, you know, everyone there being poor and everyone there being on welfare and eating and slinking out kind of with a head down. And next door now, we've opened a clothing store, which is composed of new clothing that has been donated by mostly United States wholesale clothiers who probably are donating, you know, end of the season or out of fashion first line clothes. They are brought over. There are the wars of the Jews are happen at the port when the customs says, well, you have to pay customs. And Carmel Ha'ir says, what are you talking about? This is for the poor. And that's a big issue. A lot of times we have to pay a significant amount of customs to get the material out of port. And sometimes we've been able to get it free. But in any case, the people who come to this store come with a credit card. Not a MasterCard or a Visa or an American Express, but a credit card that has been loaded by the appropriate approval of the welfare authorities. And they go into this store and they pay, they pick out, they bring their children, and they pay like anyone else does in any store. And the dignity of that process is not lost upon them or their children, who otherwise might have to go into some, you know, second-hand warehouse kind of Salvation Army type of clothes distribution center, and now are able with dignity to both clothe themselves and feed themselves without the tag. I have another extremely interesting project of a deaf blind theater troupe. That is, it's called Na Lagat, which in Hebrew means please touch. And they are people who are both deaf and blind, most of whom suffer from Usher syndrome, which is a syndrome where you're born deaf and inevitably sometime between your early 20s, 30s, 40s, go blind. And these are a group of 12, 11 now, one recently passed away, actors. Can you be deaf and blind and an actor? I said to myself when I was first invited to a performance, I said, well, I'll do them a favor and I'll go and I'll politely clap at this, you know, I'll be doing them a favor. Well, it's professional theater that you leave with goosebumps. They've played all around the country in Israel, some more than 60 performances. They've played at the United Nations headquarters in Geneva. They've played off-Broadway in New York at the Symphony Space and sold out the theater. They played in Lincoln Center at last year's Jewish Heritage Festival. It is extraordinary. And if that weren't enough, that would be enough. But it isn't enough for Eran Gur and Adina Tal, the founders of this extraordinary organization, Na Lagat. They have raised over $1 million and rented a large industrial warehouse on the Jaffa port. It is in the process of being renovated and will be turned into a theater in which Na Lagat will perform, but also two small elite restaurants. One will be service in the total dark by blind waiters. You will place your order outside. You will then be led by the blind waiters into a pitch dark small dining room and seated. You will be served your delicious food. You will smell it. You will touch it. You will taste it. You will be able to talk and talk about it. You won't see it. And in doing so, you will pay a very nice price for a delicious meal that you will more highly appreciate through all but one of your senses, and perhaps more highly appreciate what it is to be blind. The other restaurant will be in the light, and it will be non-verbal. That is, your waiters will be deaf, and you will not be able to talk to them in order to communicate. So you will talk to them either by learning sign language that will be posted and you kind of be taught, or by trying lip reading, or by writing. We'll give you a pad to write with, but you will have an experience of a dining experience, but no talking. I imagine they won't like punish you if you talk to your fellow diners, but if you want to communicate your desires to the waiters, you will do so. Now, this experiential entertainment center, where you'll be able to come to a play or come to one of these special restaurants, is all non-profit. Any profits made from the restaurants will go to the benefit of the blind deaf in Israel. This will open up in November, and I think it's going to be a must-do stop for anyone who comes to Israel. I could go on. Dental clinics for the poor, ecological farm in which 20 people live and volunteer, solar panels, recycled water, they are not, like it's around, I don't know, what, 100 acres or some large amount of organic food growing and sold in Modi'in. They are not connected up to the electric corporation at all. And they have a generator, but they don't need it anymore because they are generating enough electricity to do everything that they do. Building of buildings using mud brick technology that both draws on the ancient and on the most modern architectural and solar energy principles. It's quite an amazing organization that both is an organization that I think is the best response to Al Gore's, you know, save the planet, save Earth, because it does, as a model, do as we are doing, but it also goes out into the schools and has created in 20 schools ecological corners and developed a group of kids who are responsible for pushing and promulgating recycling and organic growth and information about the environment in the schools. So here is a wonderful example of someone, you know. What's interesting is in both this case, where Itzik Gaziel, the founder and director of the it's called Chava Adam, the Adam and Eve ecological farm, is a former businessman who made a fair amount of money and then said, "Is this all that life is about? I want to do something more meaningful and productive with my life." And Eran Gur, who was in the defense industry and saw this play of Na Lagat that his neighbor Adina Tal had produced with the blind deaf, and said, "This changed my life," and sold his company and spent the first year and a half as a volunteer putting his own money into developing the administrative side of Na Lagat and putting it on a even keel, so that the creative energies of Adina and the actors could be brought to fore. Matach, the Center for Educational Technology, which has developed all of the educational computer programs and is doing a great deal of long-distance learning, bringing the best of the mentors from Israel's universities to the farthest corners of Israel's periphery, where the teaching levels are low and the salaries are low and the living conditions are low and the municipalities are poor, but those kids who have the potential are getting by long distance through video and through computer and through audio-visual technology an opportunity to shoot as high as they possibly could go. I could go on. You're supposed to be interviewing me, and I'm just talking and talking. But I guess what I have the wonderful privilege of of doing is seeing the good side of Israel, the side that isn't bombs and human rights violations, in spite of the fact that I do have organizations that are very much involved in the struggle for human rights and equality for the Arab citizens of Israel and working for peace and so on. If you want a more complete idea, you can go to my website, which is www.israelgrants.com. That's www.israelgrants.com. I don't know, ask me something. I have more to say, but I don't want to go on without some direction.
David, are there any organizations which you think of as being easier to raise money for than others, or people come to you and you say, I don't think I can, we can, this isn't attractive to donors?
Well, of course there are organizations that are more likely to receive funding. The ones that deal with children and children at risk and Ethiopians and to some extent women's empowerment and to some extent Arab-Jewish or human rights and to some extent the handicapped and so on. But basically every organization has the capacity to raise funds. The question is, are they willing to structure themselves and push themselves to learn and do it? I generally don't take on organizations that come to me and say, raise the money for us. We'll sit back and we'll wait for you to come back. I come from a community organization background, which means that what needs to happen is that I have to work with the organization to help them realize their potential, to help them realize that who they have as supporters, to get them to think about if they have former people who have received service, or the relatives of people who have received service, or graduates of their organization, or people who the staff or the lay leadership, the board knew from the past who have made it, but they, you know, haven't been in touch with them or haven't thought to ask them to help fulfill the vision that they have. So part of my job is to train and to teach the organization to be able to say sooner or later, David, we don't need you anymore. You've given us the right direction and the right idea, and we'll do it ourselves, or we'll hire somebody, and then I'll help them hire them and help transition the person in. I guess the other thing that I wanted to say is that I this happens to be an expanding field in Israel. That is, one can work. There are jobs in this field as grant writers and as fundraisers and people who come with experience from nonprofit work in other countries and who can transfer the experience, have something to contribute here. The nonprofit sector is about a third of Israel's economy. Now, you have to consider that hospitals, universities, museums, the military is not nonprofit, but municipal governments, there's a lot of nonprofit work. And one of the things I do is I do courses that assist people to hone their skills or to transfer skills that they might have had as a technical writer or a journalist or something like that, and understand how the grant writing process works. I get a fair number of calls from people who are new in the country and who take one of my courses, and then afterwards I'm involved in perhaps referring them for for job opportunities.
In Jerusalem, we know all sorts of people. It seems a little like a tradition. I mean, fundraising for Jewish institutions has a long history. And one of the institutions, certainly in the Jerusalem area, that have been fundraising for many, many years are the religious institutions. And I've known, and I'm sure you've known, people who fundraise for various religious institutions. And there's some kind of a traditional, I don't know if it has any legal standing, where they can, you know, stand on a street corner and ask for money, or go to America and ask for money, and they get, by and large, it seems like some kind of a standard 1, 2, 5, 10% of the money they raise is theirs. And I assume you don't work on that kind of a standard.
Fortunately, it's not 1, 2, 5%. It's 10, 20, 30%. It's not, basically, it's an issue. First of all, the code of ethics of the American Association of Professional Fundraisers and the Israel Association of Professional Fundraisers says that percentage-based compensation for a resource development professional is not ethical. On the other hand, Jewish religious community and Jewish communal history, I suppose, it has long been a profession, the profession of schnorr. I think even someone told me that there is, I'd be happy to be corrected, that there's some ruling of Maimonides that says that up to 49% is acceptable and not more. So it used to be a profession that helped the community live, a tax collector kind of thing. From the organization's point of view, I can certainly understand it. An organization says, I don't have an unlimited amount of money. I could pay somebody, and he might not bring me as much money as I'm paying him. I might lose. So if I can pay somebody, and even if I have to give him, 10, 20, 30, 40%, I'm getting money without having to pay for it. But it's a very problematic approach, in my opinion. I have taught at the School of Social Work resource development for welfare organizations, and I have an hour and a half session on this. But in summary, I think all donors and all foundations expect that when they make a gift, that 100% of their funds are going to go for the vision that you have told them their funds are going for. And if they were told, and believe me, the people who fundraise for a percentage don't say, I want you to know ahead of time that I get 30% of what you're going to agree to give. They say, oh, 100% you're going to, the children need it and so on. And then when inevitably the donor does find out that not all his money has found its way where it was supposed to go, and it went into the pocket of the person who sold them a vision, and 30% of the vision was his pocket, that's a very significant problem for ongoing relationship with the donor. I work on a per-hour basis or on a monthly retainer basis at a per-hour amount that's less. If you take a look at my website, you can see that fortunately some over $15 million of funds have been raised that I don't take credit for, but I have been involved in, I assisted in, I played a role in helping a large number of organizations. And by and large, I'm happy for people to talk to the organizations and say, is this a good risk? Is this a good investment? In my opinion, any organization needs to budget for resource development like they need to budget for rent or for utilities or for the director or for their computer. It's part of what the process of running a nonprofit organization is, but money is not the goal. The goal is building up a group of people who are committed to supporting the organization, so committed that they will give of their own money and that they will ask others and foundations and other institutions that view an organization together with their lay and professional support as carrying out their vision. And that whole process, the process of community development that I think in the final analysis not only benefits the recipients of service, the recipients of welfare services or cultural events or a peace process, but also the doers and the givers who are participating in the mitzvah.
David, you're a very lucky man. I think you know that, to be involved with so many exciting and creative enterprises in this country. And I thank you very much for your time.
And if I can just add one last advertisement, I can be reached if anybody would like to talk to me, either from the point of view of a donor who would like to contribute to any one of these or a number of other organizations that I didn't have the opportunity to discuss, or if they are connected with an organization that would like my fundraising assistance, you can contact me at grants, G-R-A-N-T-S, at netvision.net.il. That's grants, G-R-A-N-T-S, at netvision.net.il, or call me at 02-563-6629 in country code 972 Israel.
And the website again?
The website is Israel Grants, www.israelgrants, ISRAELGRANTS.com.
I'd like to say to our listeners, we've heard a little bit about several very interesting and fascinating organizations and activities here in Israel that David Epstein is involved with. If our listeners are interested, and I talked to David, by the way, that we should do programs on the individual organizations. And if there are any of these organizations that particularly interest our listeners, we invite them to let us know. And if there are any organizations that weren't mentioned that our listeners would like us to do programs about and inform them more about, please let us know. This is IsraelScene.com.